is W2 Tango Tango Tango, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. We'll be using the call sign K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo, which is the club's call sign. Tonight, any station with emergency or priority traffic, please call K2BAR. Okay, this is a reminder, the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is available and open to any radio amateur with privileges to operate on the 2-meter amateur radio band here in these wonderful, beautiful United States of America. We hope that you will sign in whether or not you have a question or a comment. And in fact, sometimes your presence drives the subject matter, even though you may not have had a question. Your physical, shall we say, presence can sometimes inspire a subject. So we hope you will join us. TechnoLumet can talk about pretty much anything related to amateur radio, telecommunications, electronics, things, and people who use it. So it's a pretty wide open subject. There's no tight definition of what is technical. Our hobby is a technical hobby. We use it for all sorts of technical and social and intellectual purposes, service opportunities, etc. So we hope that you'll share your God-given gifts by participating in the net tonight. So on that note, we'll sign people into the net. And we'll do that by asking you to sign in with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether or not you have a question, a comment, or none of the above. So let's start with Alpha Call. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Okay, nothing heard. Let's go to the whiskey calls. Anybody with a whiskey call, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
This is W2JEK, Don. No questions.
Good evening, Don. Good hearing you. W2JEK acknowledged. Any other whiskey calls, please call K2BAR. Okay, let's move on to November calls. Any November calls, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. Okie dokie, let's move on to the K2s. Stations whose call sign begin with Kilo 2, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above, please call K2BAR.
K2RPC, Ken, none of the above.
Be acknowledged. Any other kilos? Any Kilo 2s, pardon. Okay, let's go to any Kilo calls whatsoever. Any call sign, any prefix with Kilo, K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2UWV, Denver, no questions, no comments.
K2BAR, this is KC2UYV, Richard, no questions, no comments.
I may have doubled somebody. Any other Kilo?
KF2ID, Ben, I had a question.
Good evening, Ben. No problem. We've got the fact that you have a question in mind. That's excellent. We'll get back to you in a moment with that. And any other kilos, please call K2BAR.
KA2BDU, Talmud, and I do have a question.
K2BAR, this is KC2BYV. This is no question, no problem.
Not a problem. I believe there was another kilo who was underneath you. Who was that?
KA2BDU.
That was underneath. Okay, Helmut, I have you. Who is the other kilo?
K2ZO.
K2ZO. Jim, and do you have a question or comment for the net?
Not at this time.
I have a message for you, actually. I'll put that at the top of the net, so stand by. Once we get everybody checked in, I'll share a little something for you and everybody else will probably get a kick out of. Alrighty. Any other kilos?
This is KC2PYB, Richard. No questions, no comments.
Good evening, Richard. And I'm sure you can come up with some question, Richard. You're good that way. Anyway, very good. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos?
KO2, okay, Bennett.
Bennett, good evening. Any questions or comments on that?
Not yet, thanks.
Received. Any other kilos? Okay. Let's go back. Any whiskey stations who haven't checked it, please call K2BAR. Alright. Any November stations? Okay, any 4X4, 4Z4? How about OZ1? Okay, well, I guess so. Any other stations who'd like to check in at this time, please call K2BAR.
It's W2JEK. Just to add it that I do have a question as of now, over.
Okay, Don, no problem. We'll add you to the list. All right. Any other stations wishing to check in, please call K2BAR. All right. Well, good evening, everyone. We have now three questions, and I have one comment, which I promised to share at the top of the net. And that was that N2BSA, a friend of his name is Greg Nitkowski. He knows Jim a little bit, and he knows Johnny Burgio, of course. Anybody who's been around a long time knows W2JB. And he passes along his greetings, Jim, and, wanted to stop in and say hello to you, but he was at the wrong Ramsey Outdoor today because he had something he had to do there, and he never knew that there was a store in Paramus. He only knew about the Ramsey store, so he wanted to know which store you worked in, and I explained to him that he worked up in the Ramsey store. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I never knew it existed." So N2BSA is a fellow scout leader and also a retired Marine. Master Gunnery Sergeant is a good friend of mine. We do Jamboree on the Air every year, probably for a decade now, every year together. So, anyway, Jim, I'm going to throw it to you in case you want to make any reply comments. K2ZO, W2, TTD, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR, K2ZO. Yes, no, Greg, he's a friend. Too bad he didn't come by the store. I wasn't working today, but I will be working tomorrow, but... yeah, tell them I work on Friday, Saturday, and Tuesday, and I'll get them a good discount. How's that?
Yep, okay. I'll keep that in mind. I'll be communicating with him between now and next Wednesday, and I'll probably see him next Wednesday night at the program launch over at Lambert Castle next Wednesday night. Alrighty. Anybody else, or any more from you, Jim, or anybody else want to comment about Jamboree on the Air, N2BSA, or Lambert Castle, perhaps? Those are the key words that came up in the dialogue. Back up. Well, that was weird. Okay, I don't know what happened there, but the repeater seems to be back up. Let's try that again. Well, thank you, Jim, for your comments about Friday, Saturday, and Tuesday. I'll keep that in mind. Yes, you work mostly days into evenings, so I'll keep that in mind as well. I'll have him call ahead. He works, as you know, some really weird hours because he works for the Postal Service. Alrighty. KF2ID, you had a question, Mr. Ben. Go right ahead. K2BAR.
I've been looking into some antenna design programs, actually, and one is called ESNEC, and that's distributed in part by the ARL, and you can get it from them directly, actually. There's no difference between what you get from the ARL and from them. And the reason, and the
The other one is Mamana, MMANA. It's a Japanese gentleman. Now, both have two attributes which are great. They're free. So that's why I'm looking at them. Now, the EZNEC one, distributed by the ARL, and it has the advantages that if you read articles in the ARL literature, like QST, most of the writers seem to, when they said they designed something on an antenna program, they seem to use the EZNEC. So that's the advantage of that one. But the free version of it is has limited capabilities. Now, let me drop out for a moment. The limitation is that they only allow 10 segments. If you want more than that, you got to pay. For those of you who are not familiar with antenna design programs, basically they take the antenna specified geometrically and they divide it up into little segments and assume calculate what current would go in each segment and then calculate what the contribution each little segment makes in the field. So the more segments you get, the more accurate the representation, particularly when the antenna has bends or corners in it. They need a lot of segments. The MAVNIC program has no limitations on the number of segments. And the more segments you put in, the more time it takes to compute. But the fact that it doesn't. So, but I work with a little bit. I work with a little bit, and then I have questions about them. And I really don't have anybody to answer. To answer the questions, some of the very fundamental terms of what buttons to push, basically. So I'd like to know if anybody has used them and are familiar with them, so that I can ask them particular questions. Some of the questions are, most of the questions are quite simple. It's a program operation questions. That's my questions. Anybody use them, familiar with them, and mind if I ask them some questions? KF2ID.
Well, EZNEC is a good program, and so is MMA, so I'm really glad you brought the subject up. That's excellent, Ben. Does anybody have experience? I've used EZNEC before, but I'm just kind of wondering if anyone else has done some design other than NO2T, who I know has, and a little bit myself over the years. Has anyone else played with that program? It's KTBAR. Well, I would strongly suggest that people download the free version because you can model some, you know, pretty straightforward things with that. Have a grandy old time. Hold on a second. Alright. Sorry about that, guys. So you can model wire dipoles, you can wire untapered tribanders, as you said, 10 segments. That means 10 wire equivalent segments. Can be modeled with that thing, and it's pretty cool. Download the free one from the ARL or download MMA. You can Google MMA and you'll find it, as well as EZNEC, EZNEC. It's something to really consider doing. I think it might you might be surprised what you come up with designing with that tool. And it's very accurate. You get very good pattern results, and as long as what you model is what you build, you will get the same results pretty much as modeled. It's also good for modeling stacking and some other things too, but you definitely need the more complex program for that, either MMA or the not-so-free version of EZNEC. Anybody else have any comments about this? Please call K2BAR. Okay, the one thing, I haven't used a recent version, Ben, but one of the things I found tedious with those programs is that and I seem to recall having used MMA as well, but it's been a while. But I think the thing that I find most tedious is that you actually have to specify the wires, and I often want to draw the antenna out and then have it assign a label to each wire equivalent segment, and I would just enter in, I just have to enter the dimensions into a table and go from there. Alas, that's not the way that program or those programs operate. Have you tried to play with EasyNet or MMA at all?
Yes, I tried to play with them, and come back to your first comment, to draw that out and then specify it on tables. I strongly suspect some of the more professional programs that are a little more costly could probably do that, because that's another level of software that has to interpret your drawing and specify it geometrically. So those programs have limited capability for obvious reasons, that they're essentially designed by individuals. But there are more expensive, high-priced programs which I'm almost positive will do that. So I can't say definitely, having never used them or even seen them, but based on the sort of my knowledge of software and design, stuff like that, I would strongly guess that. But in any case, my problem has been when I tried to specify said antennas, the J-pole is an NSAID antenna. So I decided to, well, just feed the line at the end and find out what the reason, what the radiation resistance of that antenna is at those at the frequency when NSAID, that is a resonant antenna. And I get ridiculous numbers out of the program, which means that the way I'm feeding it is wrong, and I don't know what's wrong with it. I'm doing something wrong, but what it is, I don't know. Probably ought to email EasyNet or something like that, get the answer. But I just thought maybe somebody would know. And there are some other software or operation, simple questions that I have. You know, sometimes you don't quite know what to do, and you spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. When somebody says, oh, all you got to do is this, or push that button, or make this specification, and the problem goes away. You know, when you're working, you're trying to learn software by yourself. So that sometimes happens and can be frustrating and time consuming. So it's nice to have somebody to call. All right, with that, I'll go back to K2BAR. This is KF2AD.
Okay, so let's look at the antenna in question. You're trying to model an NSAID, and what did it give you back in wave impedance characteristics?
Well, I don't remember, but it was very high, and I know with the NSAID it's not that high. That number was like 4,000 ohms, 10,000 ohms, but the number was astronomically high, a resonant antenna. And I know it must be doing something wrong. I don't know what it is.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, maybe some of us can play with EasyNet in the next week or so. Are you using the free version of EasyNet or MMA? Are you using EasyNet or MMA?
Oh, I think I had trouble with both of them, so I can see I'm specifying wrong. Not only that, I specified the frequency as a resonance. If I remember, it gave me a number which also had an imaginary component to it. But I'm not absolutely sure. I don't remember. It's a little while since I did it. But I remember exactly right. But even, like I said, I said entered the antenna at its resonance, half-wave antenna, and I got a ridiculous number, which I know is impossibly high.
So I'm almost certain that I'm specifying it somehow wrong. I'm not quite sure what.
Okay.
Very good.
That's interesting, to say the least. All right. Well, maybe some of us can work on that over the next week and become a little more familiar with it. And we'll go back, go from there. All righty. Anybody else have any comments on EasyNIC? Very good. Next question is to Helmut, KA2BDU. Go ahead, Helmut.
This is KA2BDU. Thank you, Gordon, and good evening to all. And here's my question. How can one tell if an antenna is too long or too short for a certain band? Over.
Are we assuming some form of vertical, some form of dipole kind of antenna?
Let's say a long wire, end set.
Ironically, it seems like it's the same question Ben asked in a different way. Let's think about this. If you are going to feed, a piece of wire from an end, and I'm going to put it in vertical mode just because, it will, assuming it has a counterpoise, that's appropriate, then I'm going to assume if it shows the high SWR on the frequency you want, you can, simply calculate its length and figure out where it's a quarter of a wave, what frequency it's a quarter wave, and go up or down from there to get to that point. So if at the frequency that you calculated should be resonant, it seems to be, lower SWR at the lower frequency and higher SWR at the higher frequency, then my guess is that if you want to operate the lower part of the band, you leave it alone, and the higher part of the band, you have to shorten it. It's very simple. Well, just wanted to follow there in your breath. So, the idea would be, you have to know the length of the wire and do some basic calculations, the quarter wave, calculation. And it's, if you want to do a half wave, take 468. If it's quarter wave, take, 234. And, they'll give you your length and feet for that frequency question. Or if you know the frequency, it'll give you the frequency question where it's resonant. And you can know whether to adjust it up or down as a function of what frequency you really want to be resonant. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I was wondering if I sit behind the rig and try to figure out should that antenna be longer or shorter, then I try to tune it. That's really what my question is over.
Well, a long wire antenna end fed is usually not self-resonant at 50 ohms. That's what your radio wants to see. So, you got a couple of issues you got to solve there, right? One is the characteristic matching impedance, and the other one is whether or not the wire is resonant. So, I still think you could use 468 if you were looking for a half wave equivalent, or 234 for a quarter wave equivalent, and go from there. Again, if you want to sweep the wire as is and just plot SWR as a function of frequency, you can do that, and a lot of guys do. They'll take a 1 watt signal and just simply plot the SWR of their antenna across a band, let's say in 50 kilohertz increments. On 75 meters, you might even do it in 25 kilohertz increments. Frankly, 160, you probably will as well. But you know, I think if you plot the SWR as a function of frequency and see where your SWR is low versus where it's high, you can figure out whether or not you need to cut wire or add wire to, you know, get the resonance or the most resonant, lowest SWR, you know, out of that antenna for the frequency where you want to actually operate the your station over.
Okay, thank you very much, Gordon. KA2PDU.
I can't tell you the number of times I've opened up an Excel spreadsheet or a yellow pad and written down a frequency and written down the SWR, written down a frequency, written down the SWR, and then just plot it, or you can just see the numbers. You don't have to plot it if you don't want to. But I think that's your best bet, and it'll tell you whether or not you need to add or subtract wire for a particular part of a band. I think that I mean, it'll become obvious. Because the answer to your question is dependent on what the data says. But I think that's key. All right, anybody else want to comment on this? This is K2BAR.
If it's this is K2BZO, if I got it.
Jim, go ahead.
If it's just a raw wire laying there, the easiest way to check it is to use a grid dip feeder and grid dip it. Because if it's just a half, if it's a long wire, its impedance will be very high. If it's a one wavelength long, it'll change drastically depending on the frequency. A grid dip meter would at least get you there, especially since you couldn't use a noise bridge or some other type of measuring device that was set for 50 ohms. If you had a 50 ohm antenna, a noise bridge is the best way to tell whether it's reactive in a positive or a negative, which tells you whether it's longer or shorter. And that's very, very sensitive and very easy to do.
Yeah, one other point about that is if it's 50 ohms, you could also use something, you could sweep it with a, well, like a an MFJ antenna analyzer as well. Is there another station you want to make a comment?
82AMI.
Good evening, Tony. You're checked in, and you have a comment?
If you use the MFJ antenna analyzer, it really wants to see a 50 ohm load in order to give you an SWR reading on its meter. The antenna analyzers are designed to look at a 50 ohm load. You won't get a true resonance, but you won't get a real nice dip, I should say, an antenna analyzer, unless you're going into a 50 ohm antenna or something close to it. But you have to determine what frequency that wire is resonant at, first of all. And you can do that with a plot. And again, the plot doesn't tell you how much wire to add or subtract. You have to realize that if you're lower in frequency, then your wire is too long and you have to cut off a little. And if you are higher than the frequency that you want, then you have to add wire. So just some comments. Maybe you can improve on those comments, but they weren't covered exactly with Gordon's explanation.
I like your explanation better, but that's basically what I would do. Alrighty. Anybody else? Alright, Helmut, back to you.
Well, I thank you all for the help. And if I use everybody's idea, I should have a perfect antenna. And I could take the analyzer and see where it responds better to a higher or lower frequency. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, you're begging one other question, and that is, once you get the RF into the wire with a decent match, however you do that, the next question is, where does the signal go, or where's it going to be sensitive to, if you will? So, depending on the position of that wire, the characteristic impedance may change. As a consequence of its position, the takeoff angle, if you viewable, the radiation pattern of that wire will change. And depending on how you choose to feed it, may change. You feed it from the middle, you feed it from the end, you feed it as a dipole, you feed it, offset, off-center fed, you feed it with a single line, like a T. All those things are going to affect how the antenna actually radiates, and just for fun, will affect the matching that you have to do, and may mess with your resonant point as well. So keep that in mind. The perfect antenna may be perfect for one thing and not another. You never know. Alrighty. Let's just take a break for a second, see if there are any other check-ins. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2SGS. No comments or questions.
Hey, Rachel, good evening. No problem. KC2SGS, acknowledge. Anybody else? Question and I forgot what it was. I didn't write my own question down. I was kind of distracted. So, let's do Don's question. Mr. Don, your question, sir, K2BAR.
Hi, K2BAR, and that's W2JEK. I'm right now tuned up on the 40 meter CW band on 7030, and I'm hearing a pulsing sound. I've heard this before on 20 meters, and I've heard it here, and I'm wondering what it is. Not CW, and it's not ready, it's something else, and I don't know. Is it one of the new data modes or what? I don't know if anybody's got a radio on right now, but that's where it is, and I'm curious about what it might be. The last time I heard it was right before the North Koreans shot off a rocket back in March, in the end of March. We heard it a couple times. Up on the 20 meter band. I was just wondering what kind of pulsing this noise is. I don't know if it's an over the horizon radar or is it some kind of data signal that ham operators use. Back to that.
I didn't catch the frequency, but I'm not in front of my HF station. Do you want to repeat the frequency again?
7030 kilohertz.
Okay, maybe some guys can take a look at that. And while they're doing that, I'll just make one comment. How about that Kim Il-sung and his buddies, celebrating our Memorial Day with three ballistic missiles and just for fun, a 20 or 50 kiloton nuclear weapon. Isn't that great? God bless Kim Il-sung and his buddies. All right, on that note, thinking of Memorial Day, maybe the possibility of having to add reasons to recall it. I don't even want to say celebrate, but anyway, celebrate the lives who we miss. In any case, anybody have a chance to listen on 73? Hold on. You're hearing it right now?
This is W2JEK. Yes, it's on there right now.
Yeah, I'm hearing it. Boy, that is a weird sound. This is K2ZO. That is really weird.
You want to play it for us, Jim?
Hang on a second. Let me put this antenna on the... Let's get the right antenna here. Is that weird?
Alien.
Someone have a scope? Can you put that on their audio?
KC2QYM, good evening.
KC2QYM, Peter, good evening. Your questions, comments, confusion?
Good evening. I just turned the radio on. I'm so sorry I didn't join earlier. I don't really have any questions. What frequency is this strange sound coming from?
7030.
I'll take a look. I have a scope. Hold on.
Yeah, it to me sounds like some form of very coherent modulation. And, Don, you said you first heard it back in March, just before the Koreans did their other little rocket launch?
Roger, I heard it on March 31st at 0031 hours on 14009. And a little later, it was also on 14024. And it was a couple times on there on the 31st of March. In the afternoon at 1742 to about 1744 hours. That's all Greenwich Mean Time. And I did bring it to the ARRL information, technical information service fellow named Chuck up there, and I haven't heard any more about it since then, but it seemed to disappear. Tonight I noticed it again, but this time on 40 meters.
Jim, do you have the 40-meter dipole element? You have the 40-meter tip for your antenna?
No, I do not.
Does anybody have a rotatable 40-meter antenna?
Hey, it stopped. I don't have a rotatable, I only have a line wire, but it stopped. And it was very strange. It seemed to be centered on 7030, but it was moving around.
Okay. So, Don, when you talked with Chuck up at the league, did he point out that it reminded him of something amateur or not?
He hadn't heard. So he didn't hear. I don't know if he had heard any. I recall he had any other reports about it or not. But I know Joe Meade heard it, and other times too before I heard it. So, as you say, the fans get more messed up with something. So you talk about 20 meters at that time. I don't know. I'm just wondering if that thing has an over the horizon radar. I said, that's the thing. I see her pulsing like that. And I think if you guys, somebody had heard it, the only thing I'd tell you is what would be down there, it would be ham operators. I didn't think I'd be, all right, what's PSK-31 sound like? I don't think that's, I think I've heard PSK-31. I'm not sure, but I think that would sound pretty much like really. I'm not sure, maybe somebody has heard it would know what it is. Jim and K2ZO, I think you know what PSK-31 sounded like. So that would, I think, put an identification on it was that, but it's something else. Back then.
It's back again. And it seems to be fairly narrow, but then again, it seems like on my scope, it's pulsing around, it's moving around. Some of its peaks are moving off frequency to the side, back again to the center.
Well, it's not PSK-31, I can say that right now. It could be one of the other more exotic modes. I'm just not familiar with them.
It's another one on 71. There's another one on 71, 7015 right now, too, Gordon.
I'm in my truck, unfortunately, so I can't listen to it. Oh, dear. Well, it's certainly interesting nonetheless.
I think it's the same thing, Jim. I think it's the same thing. It's just moving around. It's scanning back and forth. Of course, in my scope, I see strange peaks all over the place now in that area.
What kind of scope are you looking at, Peter?
I have a 756, Gord.
Oh, okay. And you're seeing the same kind of characteristics on a couple of different frequencies, or is it moving?
Yeah, it's moving. It's like, you can see it almost like waving back and forth, but it's hitting crests at 7015, 7030, and it's moving back and forth pretty heavily. There is other activity. There's a lot of CW in that region and stuff, but it looks like it's moving back and forth very rapidly.
What do you think the aggregate bandwidth is at any given time?
15 to 20 kilohertz at least, I think, from what I could see or sense. It's hard to make it out. All I know is I'm hearing it on 7015. If I tune down, I'm still hearing it at 7014. pulses are still picking up. The splatter's still picking up down to 1713. Let me tune through here. I'm still tuning through 76. I'm still hearing it at 7018. It's less, the amplitude is not as great. Then in between that, there were some CW stations tuning up to the 7021 zone. 7026, don't hear it very well. And now it's sort of off. It dropped.
We have a mysterious signal. How cool is that? Well, let's keep an ear out on it, and we'll go from there. That's pretty exciting. So I have a question, first for Denver, if I may. KC2UWB, Denver, do you have an HF radio?
No, I don't at the moment. All I have is the SD101, KC2UWB.
So, a what 101?
SD101, E602 radio.
So you do have an HF radio, so you could tune this as well.
Yes.
You might want to try to look into that and see if you can hear this thing too in that neighborhood. That's excellent. So if you can, get some wire up and see what you can hear as well. Even if you can't transmit, you certainly can get a sense for what's going on in the band. And I'll give you a hint. When I was your age, I would have died and gone to heaven to have an SP-101. Oh, man. Dear me. And when Jim was looking forward to it, when Jim was that age, he was looking forward to his kid inventing the SP-101. Anyway. All right. Enough of that. So any other comments about this bizarre signal?
Just like my scope says or showing, and I could change the span of my scope, it's at 7045 as well. It's like really just moving around back and forth and peaking and sending its coded encryption or whatever at all these little peaks.
You think it could be radar?
Yeah, this is KC2QIM. Maybe that one is one of those, like, long ocean-going radar kind of systems. I don't know. I've never heard the signal, and I haven't been a ham long enough to have enough experience to have heard these things, but this thing is, like, all over the place, and you can see its crests all over the section of the band I'm looking at.
Okay, it makes me want to put up a rotatable 40-meter dipole, even if it's loaded. Well, let me ask a question. Has anyone had any experience with helically loaded, or possibly with some straight ends, dipoles for 40 meters or 80 meters, where you have a large winding and then maybe a straight section at the end, let's say 10 feet. Has anyone tried that? I know we've tried the. I've seen the variation of that on the ham sticks, where you take two ham sticks and a special mount turned into a dipole. Well, let's talk about something that's a little bigger. Has anyone tried building something like maybe out of 10 or 20 feet of PVC on each side? So maybe cutting the length of a 40-meter dipole by two-thirds or something like that. Has anyone tried that? This is KTBAR.
W2JK.
Mr. Dodd.
I recall years ago in some of the ARRL, in some of the ARRL antenna handbooks, there was a two-element beam made that way for 40 meters. And it's quite a few years back, but they did make it. And the compact antenna section of the handbook.
Okay. Very good. So, look for a two-element Yagi design. Go from there. That's pretty cool. you know, the modern tuner, I'd imagine we can take care of the SWR issues pretty quickly. So how effective an antenna are they?
W2JK, remember?
Head done.
Okay, I remember Jerry Sevick, a fellow that wrote the book articles on the ground radio systems and all. And basically what he was saying was he was making some verticals there that were short. I mean, not the standard length. He had a 40-meter vertical that was about 6 feet tall, had a top hat on it, and it had a voting coil right at the top of the antenna. This thing looked like a beach umbrella if you can without the cloth or canvas on it. And basically what he said is because it was short, the bandwidth was narrow. And its narrow bandwidth, it was good, but in of course, obviously, you're limited. It's not the bandwidth, but say, of the 33-foot vertical compared to the 6-foot vertical lower to the top hat. And in its area, it was efficient. But you're trading a bandwidth for the height on the thing, and that was the point of this article. Over.
And what about loaded dipoles? What about loaded, you know, two-element Yagis?
Well, I guess you're going to have a certain amount of efficiency where it's pulled up for, and when you're away from the tuning, then you're going to be. And you remember that. You're dealing with they call it 90 degrees, and a quarter wave is supposedly 90 degrees. There's a chart in there, and as your antenna becomes shorter, let's say it goes down to an eighth wave, you're about 32 ohms at 36 ohms at 90 degrees, or quarter wave, it's down to maybe about 7 ohms or 6 ohms at an eighth wave. Now you've got to remember that you're especially where you're dealing with a ground system like a vertical, you'd have to have a good radial system to make up for that, because your ground system losses are probably more than the antenna. On the page, so to speak, and then you have to compare to that to the ground loss to a full-sized quarter wave, or let's say you went to a 3/8 wave, which would be a longer antenna that would need to have the reactions with a series capacitor, you would be more efficient even yet, thing like that. But I guess it's you're playing with trade-offs there, Gordon.
Okay. Let's see. All right, very good. That kind of answers my question. Related subject. Actually, I actually have two more questions tonight. The WHJK antenna is shown as, you know, I guess, two half waves. Wait, am I reading this correct or not? No. I'm sorry. Four half waves, I'm sorry. Now, are they oriented such that each pair of half waves is physically above, one above the other, or are they in the horizontal plane? That's the one thing about the HJK design that I never got into my head, as to whether or not those were like a full wave, kind of sort of like a phased Yagi kind of thing, driven Yagi kind of thing, or are they done in a vertical plane where two half waves are sitting over top of two other half waves? Does anybody know?
JK.
Go right ahead, Don.
Yeah, that's a horizontal antenna. The two elements are horizontal, just like it would be in the Yagi, except that it's not a Yagi, you have the two half waves. Let's say on a 20-meter antenna, you'd have two halfway wings, each about 33 feet long, set at the center, and then they'd spaced about, well, let's say a quarter wave away, which would be about 16 feet. And then you'd have two more halfways, and then they'd get in the center. And there's a phasing line, and I think it twists, and the twist of the phasing line. And I think the gain on the thing is about 6 or 7 dB. This thing is usually shown as being fed with open wire line, but I guess there could be other other arrangements made with coax or whatnot. But most of what I've seen are in the books are usually fed with open wire. And I think one of the advantages of that is if it's a base of 20 meters, it might also work out 40 as a plain ordinary two-driven element antenna kind of a thing.
Okay. Let me then vary the question a bit. Can I load, you know, can I linearly load all or part of those four half-wave dipoles? Could I shorten them by putting them into a coil? I don't want to call them dipoles. They're four half-wave elements. Can I shorten them by coiling them? Comment, go ahead.
Gordon, did you see the latest QST on that 160 meter vertical?
Yeah, I did. Was that the latest or is it the one before? But yes, I did actually.
For that, they usually say you run to make a quarter wave or thereabouts, you'd use about a full wave length of wire wrapped around the element, the pole there. That's what that fellow did. That's basically the rule of thumb for the helical around the antenna.
Oh, so you use four times as much wire? Wasn't that antenna a quadrifiller? Coil, not a monofiller.
Amount of space on the element, you wrap it up as much as that amount of wire. Yes.
Do you really use more wire?
I'd have to find the article, but I think that what Don said sort of connects with what I read.
Yeah, I can certainly look at that after the net. All right. Another subject, another question. Anybody want to talk about this some more before we move on?
KA2BDU. The signal over here could be Air Force One, because Air Force One is in the air, I believe, at this time.
And how do you know that?
Listen to the radio.
K2BAR, this is KC2BYB.
Okay, Richard, go right ahead.
The signal sounds very similar to a radar with a telemetry command uplink, downlink that you might use for a command guided missile. Sounds very similar to that. This is not a rotating radar. This is a radar that is very similar to like a Yagi. It has a very concentrated central beam, and it follows the missile on takeoff and sends commands to it from a computer that's receiving its position back and correcting its course and everything. The only people I know who might use something still like that would be the Navy. Would be the Navy. The Army, as far as I know, use anything. Well, no, I'll take that back. The Army still has the Patriot operates very similar to that, but they wouldn't be in this area. And Air Force One would definitely not be sending out its position like that. The only thing I can
wonder is this a harmonic, or somehow it's out of tune or something? But I can't understand why it would be down on off frequencies. This is KC2PYB.
Could be the Cubist.
Yeah, one of them down, playing Fidel, Raul.
Yeah, this is KC2QIM. Also, again, just to emphasize, I saw the peaks. You initially told me that the frequency is 7030, but it looked like, and then I tuned down, it was at 7015 and 7045, so the peaks seem to be at 15, 30, and 45.
Okay. Very good. That's absolutely intriguing to me. Alrighty. Let's see, my next subject of all things is the I've been contemplating getting a smaller low power radio, and I'm thinking about a 703 plus or an 817. Now let's keep in mind all my other gear is ICOM, all my HF gear is ICOM. Number one. Number two, I have owned an 817 and that whole family of FT-100, 857, 897. And my big problem with that radio was that its display was pitifully small. And, you know, the menu system was just different, to say the least. So I thought the human factors on the radio were a little limited. On the plus side, it operates not only HF at 6 meters, but also 2 meters at 440. So, having said that, and with my primary interest in either being a tuning receiver or perhaps a, you know, PSK 31 engine, things like that, CW engine, I'm kind of curious what people think of the 817 family. And if you want to express an opinion about the models of 817, that's fine. This is 817, 817D, and I think an ND, if I remember right. And there's a 703 and a 703 plus. So I'm curious what people think. So any thoughts? This is K2BAR. UJK. Don, go right ahead.
Yeah, I haven't owned either one of them. Of course, the 703, it does not have the 6 meters. The 703 plus is the one with the 6 meters. And my friend Al Ted up in Pennsylvania, AA3SJ, he had one of them. A couple of my friends do have the 817. As a matter of fact, my one friend, Mike W3GS, he took it out to, he took it over to Europe with him. He took it into Australia with him on trips and stuff like that. And don't really actually operate it, but it did have it did have the shortwave receiver part of it that was there. And one thing about it, one thing they did write an article for, Mike, that was in a head, A3SJ, because they collaborated, they lived near each other in Pennsylvania. And the tuning on that 817 goes up, does not go into the high up, very high up into the 2 meter frequencies or above 2 meters. And, in other words, you get the weather frequency, you don't get the 162.55. What they did is they built a converter. Now, I know years ago MFJ used to market such a device that would enable you to tune the reach frequencies, and I have one, but EX21, but that might be thing, something to think about with the 817. Of course, you do have the advantage of 2 meters and 440 that you wouldn't have with the ICOM. And they are battery-friendly radios. Also, you might think of coming into that price range is the K2, which is a you could get that as a low-power radio, or add a sideband and 160 meters to it, and not just the HF radio, but you'd have to use a converter for that. I don't know just what your ultimate plan is to use VHF or HF with the radio. Over.
VHF. I have 2 meter and above transverters, so that's not the end of the world. So that's something to think about. I'm just kind of curious what people think. It seems that the 703 has an internal antenna center, which definitely got my attention. So, and you know, I'm just kind of curious what people think about either one. Dear B, all right. I haven't really looked at the spec sheets about how physically large it is, things like that, but it just strikes me at the 817 might be just a little too small, however flexible. I have HDs for the higher bands, and it's pretty much where those would go. I mean, the number of times I use 2 meter sidebands in such a small package would be pretty minimal. But anyway, I'm cogitating on the point anyway. I'm taking my 718s. I do have a 718, and possibly looking for a similarly equipped 817. Pardon me, a 703 plus. Pardon me, 703 plus. And doing the let's make a deal thing. So we'll see. All righty. Any other comments, questions, confusions for that tonight? This is K2BAR.
This is KF2ID. Getting back to your antenna with coils and stuff like that that you were discussing back, I just thought there were a series of articles, or one article recently, I think one article recently where they were talking about whether an end-loaded antenna or a mid-loaded antenna is more efficient. They did some tests and stuff like that. But basically, the basic conclusion is this. If you put coils in an antenna to reduce its length, then you always want to put the coil in a place where the current is minimal, because you get losses in the coils. And of course, you know, the current is distributed across the antenna in a sine wave pattern. So although it may be mechanically and more desirable to put the coil where the antenna is fed, as is commonly done, that is not the most efficient place. The best place to put the coil is further up on the antenna. So that probably holds true of any coil-loaded antenna, regardless of how it's designed. So I thought you might be useful with information. They did a study of different types of antennas, and they reached that conclusion, which seems sensible, because the higher the current in the coil, the greater the I squared R losses. So you want to keep that in mind. Stay up to right there.
Yeah, that's good advice, Ben. Thank you very much. So get the coil to the middle, like a trapped dipole. So I kind of get it. Alrighty. Any other words of wisdom from folks? Alrighty. Well, any other subjects people want to bring up? Any topics that need to be covered?
It's a reminder for the Barra meeting.
Go right ahead, Tony.
The Barra meeting is June the 7th. Lots of people have been thinking that this coming Sunday is the next Barra meeting, but it's not. It's next Sunday, June the 7th. So skip a week yet. And Jim Joyce is going to be making a presentation at that meeting about off-center-fed antennas, among other things. And I suspect there'll be some talk about Field Day and VHF contests, which are coming up. And we need input from various people on that. Back to that.
Okay. That's excellent. That's really excellent. Alrighty. One other point on that same day in the morning. We have a public service event if anyone's interested. There's a short bike ride in the morning. About 7 in the morning, we're done about noon or 1. We'll be meeting at Bergen Community College. We meet with guys with HTs and also mobile rigs. We have a goal of operating 2 meters and possibly 440. If you have 2 meters only, that's fine. But if you have 2 meters or 440, even better. Please email me at w2tangotangotango@arrl.net, and we'll hook you up. I think at this point we have a good core group of operators, but you can always use more. So, it's a Bergen County bike ride run by the County Police, County Recreation, and the Bicycle Touring Club of New Jersey. So, on that happy note, any other announcements from that, please call KTBAR. Alrighty. Well, I think then we're going to call it a day, as they say. I want to thank everybody for a really good net tonight, actually. Thank Don, W2JEK, K2RPC, KC2UWB, KF2ID, K2BDU, K2ZO, KC2UIB, KO2OK, K2AMI, and KC2SGF, K2QIM, and this is W2TTT for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, K2BAR. Returning to repeater normal amateur use, and also reminding everybody to support the Bergen County FM Association, who graciously supplies us the use of their repeaters. Good night, gentlemen, or ladies and gentlemen, W2TTT.